This story comes from the 9th chapter of St. John's Gospel. And one can summarize the story rather simply. In verse 1, we meet a man who was born blind. In the course of the story, the man gains his physical sight. But more than that, he gains an inner sight, a sight of the Spirit. And the story ends in the last verse of chapter 9, where those who have physical sight are blind to the Spirit. There are so many pieces of this story that we could take for reflection. I would suggest that we look to just a few lines early in the story. Verses 3, 4, and 5. The disciples asked Jesus, "Who has sinned, this man or his parents?" And Jesus said, "Neither of them have." And then Jesus says, "This man is born blind, so that the works of God may be visible." The blindness of this man is the occasion for the work of God to be seen. And then Jesus says, "We must do the work of him who sent me as long as it is day." That's a very important statement, and it's important because of the pronoun. I know lots of English teachers struggle to get students to understand that pronouns are important. Aren't they, Dan? They're real important. Yeah. In most of the statements of Jesus in this regard in St. John's Gospel, it's the first person singular. "I have come to do the will of him who sent me. I have come not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me. My food and drink is to do the will of him who sent me." First person singular. In this place, it's first person plural. We, all of us gathered here, all of those disciples joined with him, we must do the work of him who sent me. Now, in order to get a fix on this story, you and I have to understand a little bit about light and darkness as it was conceived in Jesus' time. Both light and darkness were alive. Light was real material stuff that had a dynamism to it. And darkness was not the absence of light. Darkness was real material stuff that had dynamism. And there was a tension, there was a conflict between light and darkness. In the opening lines of St. John's Gospel, we are told, "The light came into the world, and the darkness was unable to overcome it." Now, a thing about eyes and seeing. What the people of Jesus' time believed was that eyes were the windows to the soul, and that when a person's heart was light, was filled with light, was filled with goodness, then light would radiate through a person's eyes and enlighten around that person. But if a person's soul was dark, then darkness would radiate through those eyes and evil would spread. And no eyes were darker than the eyes of the man born blind. People were afraid to look into the eyes of blind people because they feared that what would happen is they would be caught by the darkness. They would be trapped by the darkness. We have words or images or phrases that come into our own everyday language that reflect that. We talk about, he gave me the evil eye. Means he wished bad things for me. Or he or she just gave me the eye, which is a sign of correction. Or they just rolled their eyes. A sign of dismissiveness. What Jesus does is Jesus steps beyond the margin, and he does things that are absolutely, absolutely not done. He makes mud and he smears it into the eyes of the blind man. One never, ever touched a sick person. Doctors never touched sick people. Doctors would diagnose, doctors would analyze, doctors would prescribe, doctors would make potions, doctors would make salves. But the person who touched the sick individual was the slave of the doctor. The doctor's slave would apply the potion or the salve or do what needed to be done to that person. And the reason was, if the person died, they'd kill the slave. I mean, it's a primitive form of malpractice insurance. Well, what Jesus does is he makes the clay, he makes the mud, he makes the paste, and he smears it in the man's eyes. And then Jesus passes away from the picture. He's not seen anymore until the end of the story. He tells the man, go and wash. And the man washes, and all of a sudden he can see. Well, part of the message of that story for us is that you and I, we face darkness in so many ways in our lives. And sometimes what we do is we try to find a scapegoat, someone to blame for the darkness, or we complain about the darkness, or we get angry about the darkness. And Jesus says, let the darkness be the occasion for the work of God to become visible. Don't run from the darkness. The darkness is there as an occasion for God's work to be seen. Now, what is this work of God? Well, it's at the end of St. Matthew's Gospel in the 25th chapter where Jesus describes the work of God. I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me to drink. I was naked and you clothed me. I was homeless and you sheltered me. I was the immigrant and you welcomed me. I was sick and you cared for me. I was the prisoner and you stood by me. That's the work of God. And those are the works that banish darkness. Those are the works that bring light. And you and I, every single day of the year, as members of this congregation, that's what we do. We bring light. Caring for young people, educating the minds of young people, brings light. Feeding the hungry brings light. Providing medical care for those who have no insurance brings light. Welcoming the stranger, the immigrant, the newcomer brings light. All of those difficult things that can be seen as dark become occasions for the work of God to be visible, for the light to shine. And what we do is we do that for each other, and we encourage each other and show each other how to do it. And that's what makes this congregation worthy, worthy of our energy, of our support, and of our work. There's barely a week that goes by when I don't hear from somebody that I haven't heard from a long time ago, in which they express gratitude for the gift of light. A week ago, I opened the morning paper and I saw a letter to the editor, and I thought I recognized the name of the person who wrote the letter. The letter to the editor had to do with the United States' relationship to Cuba, and it was an encouragement that now that the Castro regime has coming to an end, that we might rethink our relationship to Cuba, and especially the embargo that we have placed on Cuba. Well, I liked the article, I liked the letter, but what I mostly liked was the memory that came back of the person who wrote the letter. So that morning when I got to the office, I just wrote a little note. I Googled his name and found his address and wrote a note. And yesterday, when I came to the office, I collected my mail, and around 10 o'clock, I opened my mail, and there was a lovely letter from that gentleman. His family were immigrants from Cuba. They were refugees. It's been well over 30 years since I've seen him. He says, in part, "The church community we were a part of set an example for me how Christ would want me to treat my fellow man. And I hope you'll be pleased to hear that my personal and professional successes have occurred because I have always tried my best to live by treating everyone with kindness, respect, and dignity, which I think Christ would have us do. These relatively simple guidelines have made my life at home and at work and at play far less stressful and far more fulfilling." Then he goes on to talk about his high school and his college years. He graduated from Washington University in St. Louis. Then he attended the University of Minnesota Law School, and has worked in a number of different places, the last being for the past 12 and a half years, he has been corporate counsel to the Target Corporation. And then he talks about the gifts he's received. "I was able to receive my entire education because of the kindness and the benevolence of strangers. They provided the financial resources for me. This is something I will never, ever forget, and something I try to repay every day of my life." The young man is filled with light. And he learned that light was released in a community of faith, in a congregation, in a local parochial school, in a neighborhood, within his family. And that's the work we do, time after time after time, That's the work we do. Now, we can't do that work unless we focus on the light, unless we live in the light, unless we cherish the light. Pope John the 23rd said of himself, "I live by the sun every single day. The light of the sun is true and faithful. Even though every now and then it seems to hide, it soon comes back, more glorious and more vibrant than ever. As long as I live in the world, says Jesus, I am the light of the world. And of us, he says, we must do the work of the one who sent me."